Melodramatic. Written by Megan Parkinson. Narrated by Megan Parkinson. Produced by Be Here. Cover design by Kayla Coombs. Chapter 1, 9th of November. Regretting life choices, specifically moving to London to become a successful actor. Well, today sucked. Not only did I trudge all the way across London for a dead-end audition, my bag got caught in the tube doors at Arnos Grove Station. Only after I screamed like a shagging fox did the doors release me and I fell arse over tit. Not my finest moment. My audition? Is it even worth writing down? I showed up 10 minutes early, as usual, only to be told they're running a tad late, which, in industry terms, means get yourself comfy, love, you'll be here for a while. 40 minutes rolled by, all the while I'm sat between two other auditionees. They had identical mousy brown ponytails. Clearly I'd missed the memo. My ginger frizz was drowning in dry shampoo and scraped back with a luminous pink headband. I must have looked wild in comparison. Both girls were also clearly prepubescent, their age, or lack of it, amplified by the fact their chaperone mothers were hovering around the room. One of the mums, slightly weaselly looking, cleared her voice in the way only very important people know how.
Ahem.
And then proceeded to ask if my daughter had already gone in. I could have died. I know I'm not a teenager anymore, not even close, but come on. I'm 26. I don't look old enough to have a teenage daughter, do I? Felt like a fraud, a phony, like there was someone standing behind me with a megaphone screaming, "Yes, Mel is old, she's a fake, and she's wearing the last pair of clean underwear she owns because she couldn't be asked to throw a load in the washer." I thought it couldn't have gotten any worse, but then I was called into my audition. Met the assistant of the casting director's assistant and was asked what I thought of the script. I'd read it in length and wanted to say, "It's shite, Deborah. Cliche at best, homophobic at worst, and the dialogue reads like it was written by a 4-year-old. But I want to make this month's rent." So I lied and smiled and said, "Yeah, it's great. Loved it." Then I was told to stand in front of the camera and heard 3 words I hate. Use the space. Ugh. Those words haunt most actors. The scene is a girl asking a stranger for a lighter outside a club. How am I meant to use the space? It's a stationary scenario. Unless I mix things up a bit and chase the guy down the street for his lighter. I didn't, of course. No. Though because I was then panicking about using the space, I came across as a possessed lighter junkie desperate for a smoke. I was swiftly told, "Thanks for coming in and we'll let you know." If being in this industry has taught me anything, it's that they never let you know. Chapter 2, 21st of November. Woman unapologetically farted in my face on the escalator today. Didn't know how to respond. Ian needs a new hobby. His online shopping obsession is now beginning to obstruct the front door. There's a big, heavy, obnoxious delivery propped up against the radiator in the hallway. "It's a new wooden bed frame," he tells me, pulling at the stream of tape and jabbing a blunt pair of kitchen scissors into the cardboard. "You haven't got enough money to buy a decent food shop, Ian. How have you managed to get a new bed frame?"
"On finance."
"What was wrong with your old one?"
"It was metal, so it released bad vibes into my body while I slept. That's why I was always waking up groggy and sick."
"That probably has more to do with the fact you use vodka as a sedative, Ian." He ignored me and continued.
"However, recent evidence shows wooden bed frames absorb bad toxins while you sleep, so you wake up more invigorated."
"Recent evidence? You're having me on."
"No, seriously. I read about it on this Sleep Well blog."
Another hobby Ian needs to throw in the bin. Reading blogs that chat bollocks and have more adverts than word count. My phone rang at that point. It was my dad. calling from France. Moved there when Mum died, bought a vineyard and listens to Louis Armstrong's La Vie en Rose on repeat. It's what she would have wanted. Freckles, I need you. He sounded serious. Whether this was I've got my finger stuck in a plug socket again, or I've got a problem with my prostate level of serious, I didn't want Ian to hear, so I scuttled off and hid in the bathroom. I don't know what I'm going to do. I really don't know what I'm going to do, Freckles. I want to be nice, but I don't think I can take that many people. I need context, Dad. Your cousin Willow is getting married.
There's a surprise.
No, really, I'm shocked. The only part of marriage Willow has shown any interest in are the husbands of other brides. She's had numerous affairs with married men, but nobody ever talks about it. Tell a lie, Auntie Angela brought it up 2 Christmases ago when she drank near enough 3 bottles of Pinot. That was a fun Christmas. Who's the poor fella?
Gary or something.
Does he have a divorce lawyer? Willow has asked me to hold the wedding here, at the villa. What am I supposed to tell her? Tell her to piss off. Dad tutted at me and I could feel him do his old man disapproving head shake down the phone. I tried my hardest to think of an answer for him that wasn't oozing in sarcasm. Tell her you'd love to host the wedding.
What?
However, you'd feel uncomfortable with the idea that all her beloved friends and family will then need to foot the bill for hotels, plane tickets, travel, etc. in order to share her special day with her. So, wouldn't it be more appropriate for her to hold it somewhere closer to home?
But if she had it over there, I'd have to buy all that stuff.
Says the man living on a French vineyard, I thought. My phone beeped at me. It was my agent, Bethany Rowlands. She never rings, basically because she never has a reason to. Bless her. She stuck with me through the dry and even drier years. If it weren't for the very successful actors on her client roster, I would have been dropped yonks ago. But thankfully, the famous lot get jobs that pay off her mortgage, and I occasionally get jobs that mean she can buy a nice new coat. Dad, can I ring you back? Regrettably, I didn't give him time to answer. Just hung up and switched calls. Bethany jumped right into it. You're a bloody star, Melissa. You're an absolute bloody star, Mel. You really are. I laughed nervously, looking at my reflection in my toothpaste-spattered mirror. Too many freckles, too much frizzy hair, shit brown eyes staring back at me, and is that jam on my chin?
Why? What have I done?
You've only gone and landed yourself a bloody movie. She didn't hear me scream as I dropped my phone into the toilet. That reminds me. Must add rice to the shopping list. Ian had insisted we celebrate properly, so he did the ring round and before I knew it, I was sitting in Carlo's with a plate of lobster ravioli in front of me. Amara had joined us, as she should, best friend duty to show up and get pissed when called. She was sporting a pink cocktail umbrella in her hair for most of dinner. Unfortunately, Tilly had also come along. We met an acting class when I first moved to London 7 years ago. How do I describe her? Picture the phrase, I've never had an orgasm in my life, as a person, and you've got Tilly. Bit uptight, good looking, but not the best personality in the world. Hell, who am I kidding? She's a bit of a bitch. Only invited because I fancy her brother. Oliver, the brother in question, who, for the first time in all the years I've known him, was sitting next to me. By choice. He's regrettably one of those chiselled types, whose sole personality trait is going to the gym. Covered in tattoos and hasn't had any relationship last longer than a traffic update. Not a deal breaker in my book. Tilly had a monk on from the moment she sat down, fitting in her snide comments wherever she could. Her most notable quotes of the night?
Do you think you'll actually manage to make it into the final edit of the film? Or get cut like you did in that period drama back in May?
I don't know why you bother auditioning for films. Your features won't exactly come across well on a large screen. Your face is more built for the stage, where the audience is set far, far away. Is anybody actually interesting going to be in this film? Or is it just nameless actors?
Ian answered that one.
Well, I heard Jasmine O'Connell and Jack Hart are going to be in it.
Tilly had to hold back a yelp of horror.
How do you know that?
Ian wiggled his phone at me. Research, babe? Tilly laughed a little too heartily, then nudged Amara playfully.
Google chats so much rubbish. It says I'm 29.
You are 29,
Amara stated bluntly. She wasn't keen on Tilly either. Very much my best friend to a point where if I didn't like somebody, she didn't like them either. Out of principle. No one would ever guess we'd only been mates for a year and a half. We'd met purely by fluke when assigned the same spot to hand out flyers for a new show. Hit it off immediately when she took a picture of us holding our cargo, emailed it off to the big boss to make sure we got paid, then dumped all of her flyers and mine into the nearest bin and dragged me bowling. She is unlike any friend I've ever had. Ian pulled up an article he'd saved onto his phone for just this moment.
It says here, Symbol of Freedom, currently in pre-production, will begin filming in the new year in Manchester.
A dynamic script written by, well, I can't pronounce that.
Oh, here we go. Starring three-time Academy Award nominee Jasmine O'Connell as the brave attagirl Gabrielle Davis and violins in Vienna's very own Jack Hart as fighter pilot Keith Meadows.
Tilly mimed a yawn.
Oh, sounds like something you'd watch on the History Channel when your teacher couldn't be asked to teach.
It sounds badass,
Oliver interrupted, leaning in to give me a squeeze. He didn't release his arm from my waist, so his lips were right next to my ear.
So, are you going to be an attic girl, Mel? Fighting Germans, wearing a sexy uniform?
I think I kept it cool, but I do distinctly remember snorting nervously at that point, like some giddy, horny little piglet. No, another nervous snort. I'm playing Gabrielle's little sister.
So you'll be playing right opposite Jasmine?
Amara couldn't have looked prouder.
She is wicked fierce.
Tilly rolled her eyes.
I've heard she's quite hard to work with.
Aren't they all? Ian mused. Every successful actress has to have some streak of bitch running through her.
Tilly would know.
Piss off, Amara. I didn't pay attention to the rest of their bickering as Oliver's hand had slid down from my waist to the bottom of my spine.
Don't go bitchy on us when you're famous, eh, Mel?
He whispered in my ear before slowly moving his hand downward and briefly caressing my arse. Oliver was coming on to me. Well, either that or he's having a seizure.
Chapter 3. 18th of December. After eating the contents of 6 advent calendars, I can conclude that my Christmas list to Santa consists of the following. Tampons and a new family. Every year. Every bloody year. I don't know why I do it to myself. I get the train back up to Yorkshire, like an idiot, and voluntarily attend the Fallon Christmas clan gathering. Some bloke, can't remember his name, said something along the lines of, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's what I do. Attend the shambles of a party, expecting my family members to have gained some sort of empathy or social etiquette throughout the year, but no. They're all still as obnoxious and oblivious as the year before without fail. And if anything, some of them actually get worse. It's Mum's side of the family, so Dad never has to attend anymore. So for the 4th year in a row now, I'm enduring this crap on my own.
Still no boyfriend then, little nips?
Cousin Willow asked, making a point of flashing her arrogantly large engagement ring at me. Force a smile, fake a laugh, shove another cocktail sausage in your mouth. Her newly acquired fiancé, Gareth, was more of a drip than I'd expected. Perfect prey for someone like Willow, hanging around her like some obsessed puppy dog. He tried making conversation with me, but Willow interrupted him at every turn, taking any chance she could to talk about her sodding wedding. Force a smile, fake a laugh, feign interest in centrepieces, shove another cocktail sausage in your mouth.
Saw you on the telly, Mel.
Uncle Kenneth said to me while he was wobbling out of the toilet, fly undone.
You didn't say anything, but I saw you.
Is that the only job you got this year, or is this acting thing starting to pick up?
An acting career is nothing to be pursued, Melissa. Nanatea is, and always will be, reigning queen of self-entitlement and absent-mindedness. She thinks she's all that, but has a cardboard cutout of a questionable 60s pop star in her wardrobe. You should have been a midwife, Melissa. It's what your mum always wanted for you.
Ah, yes. The dead mum guilt trip. Until she saw my science exam results, Nana. School was never really your thing, was it, Mel?
Uncle Kenneth swirled his gin and tonic.
Too busy chasing boys.
Auntie Angela, Nana Tia, and three more of my cousins, including Willow, joined in at that point to discuss in length the exact point of my downfall. Was it my bone-idle adolescence? The lack of interest in real school subjects? Or, in fact, was I to blame at all, as losing my mum makes many an excuse for me being a complete failure at life? You're never going to excel in life, Melissa, unless you really commit.
I'm committed to acting, Nana.
It's not a proper job. You spend all your time going back and forth to these auditions that never go anywhere. You spend the rest of your time waitressing like that's a career. You're sacrificing so much. And for what? Your mother would be turning in her grave.
I mean, we cremated her, but okay. I'm sorry, what am I sacrificing exactly?
Relationships? Angela chirped up. You had that nice fella. What was his name? Franco? Felix? Oh, it's on the tip of me tongue. Lanky lad with too much hair.
Willow unsuccessfully muffled a snigger with the back of her hand.
You mean Freddy, Mum?
Freddy? God. My stomach churned. What a disaster of a relationship that was. Feels like years ago now. Hell, it was years ago. Like a whole different life ago.
Whatever happened to him? Angela pushed. We all thought we'd be buying a new hat with that one. What with you living together and all.
Nana Tia took me by the shoulder and sat me down serious.
We have a room for you, Melissa. You can move back home, settle down. Kenneth's secretary is going on maternity leave soon, so you can have her job.
She can?
Kenneth hiccuped. And before you know it, you'll be back on your feet in no time.
I wanted to scream, yell, shout at the top of my lungs. I am on my feet. I am successful. I have a job. A proper movie job. So will all of you just piss off? But I couldn't. I didn't want them to ruin something I was actually quite excited about. If I brought up Symbol of Freedom now, they'd do nothing but stain it with their judgment and bullshit opinions. They'd break it down to dust and blow it in my face. I'm always better off just saving myself the hassle and staying silent. I hid in the upstairs toilet for the remainder of the party. Could hear Nana Tia shouting for me several times through the floorboards. It was only when I heard her shout for Gramps that I got my opportunity for an escape. Grabbing my coat and car keys on the way, I purposefully bumped into Nana Tia in the kitchen. Melissa, there you are. Have you seen your grandfather? He's probably outside having a smoke. I'll go get him for you.
Well, be quick. Angela's about to serve her trifle.
I bolted for the exit, hearing the words,
"She's a lost cause, that one,"
before slamming the back door behind me. Grandpa Barry, better known as Gramps, was indeed having a smoke. Or at least trying to. Found him in the Christmas light-infested gazebo on his hands and knees. "You all right, Gramps?"
"Lost me bloody lighter."
He looked up at me, an unlit ciggy lolling out the side of his mouth.
"You're going to stand there like a Jehovah or actually help me? Hey!"
He sprang upright, clutching a lighter in his meaty paws.
"Got the bugger?"
With a few grunts and puffs, he managed to get to his feet before proceeding to collapse heavily onto one of the gazebo's benches.
"Wife's not wanting me, is she?"
"Afraid so."
"Balls."
He lit his cig anyway.
"Well, I'll just have this one."
I sat beside him, mustering up my best Nana Tia impression. "Better make it quick.
Auntie Angela's about to serve her trifle."
Gramps laughed heartily.
"That's uncanny, that."
He elbowed me playfully.
"You should be an actor."
He let out a hefty puff of smoke.
How is the acting gig going? You landed that next job yet?
He took my silence as the usual no, then began to reassure me between a series of moist, phlegm-coated coughs.
It'll come, Mel. It'll come. As long as you're still enjoying yourself, then you take as long as you need to get there. It'll come.
Tell Nana that.
Pfft. She giving you a bit of a hard time?
Understatement of the year, I thought.
Just give her time, Mel.
It's been years, Gramps. How long does she need? He took a deep drag.
Your Nana's very protective of you. It's not been long since your, mum died.
He cleared his throat. There was an unspoken rule that no one talked about Mum in front of Gramps. Her death had undeniably hit him the hardest. Reminded me of that quote, no parent should have to bury their child. Again, not that we buried her, but no parent should have to set fire to their child doesn't quite have the same ring to it. For all his jokes and banter, Gramps never laughed anymore the way he used to with Mum. He didn't sing show tunes under his breath anymore either. He wasn't really himself anymore. I don't think any of us are, try as we might.
You were home when your mum was sick and it were nice having you here. But then in a flash you packed your bags, went back off to London and it threw you, Nana. I think she feels responsible for you now, especially with your dad over the pond. She doesn't want to see you suffering. Wants what's best for you, you know?
I took a moment. Do you think, hypothetically, if I did get a big acting job, Nana would accept what I do for a living and get off my case? Gramps chuckled to himself knowingly.
Probably not.
And that's what I didn't want to hear because I knew he was right. That's the problem with any sort of job in the arts. No one around you sees it as a proper job until you've made it. And even then, what constitutes making it? You get one big job, but you never get another. You didn't make it, you just got lucky. You get a series regular part in a soap for years, are a household name, retire successful. You won't be described as having made it. More likely they'll say, well, you had a good innings, but shame you never amounted to anything more. All anybody wants from you. More.
Chapter 4, 24th of December. At what age does Christmas stop being magical and just become a financial strain and anxiety trigger?
You'd think with online purchases being Ian's forte that Christmas shopping would be his dream activity, but it's really not. He loves getting new stuff, don't get me wrong, but only for himself. When it becomes buying for somebody else, all of a sudden he's broke beyond measure and hasn't a clue where to go or what to buy. Serves you right for leaving it to the last minute, I told him as he fell through the front door surrounded by plastic bags.
I've had no money. I have no money. Therefore, I've now been forced to buy tat that'll all get thrown in the bin come Boxing Day anyway. Oh, for God's sake!
One of his bags had gotten caught on the front door handle and when he tried to pull it free, the bag had launched itself against the wall. We both heard a smash.
Well, that's Mum's £2 vase gone.
I would feel sorry for him, but he's been like this the 3 years I've lived with him. He spends all of December moaning and groaning about how Christmas is a commercialised lie to get us to spend more money we don't have. Yet come Christmas morning, he's giddy, childlike, desperate to open every present under the tree, even the ones that aren't his. He's pissed by noon, crying over the Christmas pudding and singing carols to himself on the toilet. I distracted him with chocolate and a brew.
When does your dad's flight get in?
Yeah, Dad's actually coming over for the big day this year. Bring him presents and all. Not Mum, though. She's staying in France on the mantelpiece. He's taken the train due to luggage reasons, which is basically code for I've got some stinky cheese for you.
Remind me again why he's coming here, and we're not going to Le Chateau.
He doesn't have a chateau, Ian.
It has 6 bathrooms.
Neither of us can afford to go over there.
I could scrape some cash together.
Says the bloke who just bought and smashed his mum's £2 Christmas present. I pointed at the mountain of bags in the hallway. That probably all amounts to less than 20 quid. Ian rolled his eyes.
Okay, so maybe I couldn't afford to go, but you? You're the one with the big movie job. What's your excuse?
Damn. Dad still didn't know about my new job, and I wanted to keep it that way. How in the hell was I going to explain that to Mr. Blabbermouth?
What's the face for? You just started your period.
I shook my head.
Can you maybe not mention anything about Symbol of Freedom to my dad?
Why? Ian asked, unmoved.
Because he doesn't know about it?
You haven't told him?
No.
And why not? I wasn't able to put my finger on it. I didn't tell my family because they're dicks. With Dad, it was more like I wasn't telling him because he's the opposite. Dad's nice. Really nice and supportive and... I don't want Dad thinking this is something that it's not. He'll hear movie and think I've finally got my big break.
This could be your big break.
And what if it's not? I snapped. Which, let's be honest, is more realistic. Ian rolled his eyes.
God, a bit of optimism never hurt anyone, you know.
It's Christmas. Have a bit of faith.
Amara has arrived with bottles of very nice red wine.
Is that bells ringing?
Nah, just the doorbell.
It'll be Dad.
Talk about buses. That doesn't look right. Buses?
What's the pissing plural of bus?
Buses.
Buses? Bussy?
Bussy. No, definitely not bussy.
Doorbell again.
Oh yeah,
Dad.
Piss it.
Chapter 5, 25th of December.
Happy birthday, Jesus.
I don't remember much of last night, not gonna lie. Few blurry moments are there, like Dad showing up. Dad gives the best hugs. Particularly because he wears a vest, a shirt, a woolly jumper, a cardigan, and then a fleece jacket on top, no matter what the weather. Makes him very teddy bear-esque and therefore incredibly huggable. I think Amara went in for thirds after the takeaway arrived. Food was eaten, a lot more was drunk, and after now seeing the mountain of wrapping paper under the tree, I can confirm we opened all our presents. It was after midnight, so technically Christmas Day. Ian got me a dress. I say dress, it's more like a tea towel. I got it in one of those charity shops in Muswell Hill. £4.50, absolute bargain. I'm not surprised, I said, holding up a sliver of dark green fabric. It's smaller than a fiver.
Come on, you need more sexy clothes.
I'm not prepared to argue that, Amara, especially in front of my dad. Though I'd have nothing to argue either way. Amara was right. My wardrobe consists of oversized jumpers, leggings and slipper socks. There's no thongs. For good reason too, they're uncomfy as hell. Mum used to call them butt floss. I've no mini skirts, no crop tops and no skimpy backless dresses. Until now. Amara gave me a love yourself eye-wateringly bad bath set. A self-care book that had a big, happy, naked woman on the front and when my dad's back was turned, a new vibrator. I think she's trying to tell me something. Dad, drumroll, got us all smelly cheese and bottles of his own wine. Surprise, surprise.
Bet you were popular on the train, Mr. Bishop,
Amara giggled.
There were a few complaints, Dad owned up sheepishly. But in fairness, I don't think I was the only one contributing to the smell.
Oh, must be so nice living in France, getting to eat this stuff all the time.
Ian held his brie close to his nose and inhaled deeply.
I'd be so fat.
Dad remembered at that point he had something else for me. Not present as such, just the worst thing he could have possibly given me ever.
Wedding invitation.
Dad shuffled in his chair uncomfortably. Told Willow I'd pass it along. Save on stamps.
You've seen Willow?
Then it hit me. He's letting her host a damn wedding at his villa.
Coward.
I read aloud. Willow Fallon and Gareth Price would like to invite Melissa and guest, a
A plus one?
She's given me a bloody plus one. A cow bag.
Isn't a plus one a good thing?
Amara asked, leaning over my shoulder to take a good look at the invitation herself. You'd think, but Willow's only done it because she knows I've got no one to bring. I shoved the invitation between the sofa cushions. This means I've got to bloody find someone. Ian waved his hand in front of my face, mouth full of cheese.
Hello.
I mean a date. I can be a date, Ian continued, bolting up to plead his case, sloshing the last of his wine down his front.
I can pretend to be your boyfriend if it means going to Le Francais.
Willow knows you're my housemate, Ian, not to mention gay. You gay, Ian? Dad asked, adjusting his glasses. I didn't know that. I don't think I've ever met a gay. Dad, I've always wondered, and can finally ask now I've got one in front of me. How do you do it? Ian went pink and Amara almost fell off the sofa laughing. I was mortified. Dad! In his innocence, he hadn't realised what he'd said or how it sounded. Until he did, and then he started to stutter and shuffle like he had a firecracker up his arse. I didn't mean... Oh, Ian, I meant in this day and age with society being so prejudiced, not it as in sex. I mean, I know how you would do sex. That is, I can imagine. Never had first-hand experience. Can I say that? Hand experience? Or does that sound like I've, Can clearly see why that memory has burned into my brain despite the haze of wine. God, my head. Maybe it's time to buy a wooden bed frame. Have my toxins absorbed. Oh, I think I can hear Ian vomiting into the toilet. Maybe I'll just keep the bed I've got then. Merry Christmas.
Chapter 6, 5th of January. New Year's resolutions. Why do we make them? Seriously. Going to start a new acting job is kind of like waiting in line for a big, scary roller coaster. You're nervous, excited, and yet can't shake off the notion that if this goes horribly wrong, you could die. Production sent a car to pick me up this morning at God knows what o'clock. So now I'm sitting in a barren Heathrow airport with duty-free clothes, staring at a departures board. Thrilling stuff. It's ridiculous, really. A flight up to Manchester Airport. Could have quite easily just taken the train. But no, production was insistent. It's cheaper, apparently. The flight was eventful. No, we didn't crash into the sea and have to live out our days on an uncharted island. No, there weren't snakes or a hostile takeover, thank God. However, there was a little old lady in my seat. She insisted it'd take her the whole flight just to stand up again, so would I mind swapping? Didn't think too much of it until I realised I'd swapped my economy no-leg room chair for her business class free breakfast seat. I'm going to hell for this. First-time flyer? The woman next to me asked as I craned my head over the back of my chair for the 9th time. There's really nothing to be afraid of. Not afraid, just having a moral crisis, love. I thought, oh, I'll fly all the time. I say all the time. In reality, it's once a year, maximum, and it's only ever to see my dad. I fly over for quality time that's supposed to last a week, but it's always, without fail, cut short by Bethany ringing me up. You've got an audition in Holborn tomorrow morning. Great part. Can you make it? I'm supposed to reply with, I'm sorry, Bethany, but I'm in France with my darling dad who I've not seen for 10 months. We're trying desperately to get a tan, but both being ginger, failing badly. Tell casting they can either see me when I get back or miss out on me altogether. Their loss. Got to go now. Croissant time. Au revoir. But I don't, do I? I immediately spiral. Think, this could be the next job. I can't miss it. Must make this audition at all costs. There's a manic rush to pack. I spend money I don't have on extortionately priced last-minute flight back. Beg my dad for forgiveness. And before I know it, I'm back in London after only a day away. I don't sleep because I spend all night learning lines. Then, quick as a flash, I'm in front of a casting director's assistant with baggy eyes, sunburnt cheeks and unkempt hair. Never get the job, obviously. Because who'd want to hire that hot mess?
Today we're flying from London Heathrow.
The woman beside me was rummaging through her purse.
Seriously, if it's the takeoff that's bothering you, I have some mints in my bag.
What for?
I always find flying easier when you've got something to suck on.
Oh yeah, I mused to myself. How hot is the pilot?
Oh God, I said that out loud, didn't I?
I sunk into my seat ready with a swarm of apologies. Before I realised, the woman was in hysterics, both hands over her mouth, trying not to burst out with laughter. Then, fuck, you're Jasmine O'Connell.
I just made a blowjob joke in front of a 3-time Academy Award nominee.
Her eyes went a little wide, her mood suddenly shaken by my outburst. She shuffled ever so subtly away from me. I don't blame her. I was staring.
Sorry, I just...
I blinked dumbly. I don't know how to recover from this.
What? I'm your sister?
Not like in a soap opera way. Just in a Symbol of Freedom Melissa Bishop way. Hello! It was Jasmine's turn to stare. Then, boom.
Oh my God, you're Melissa! I've heard so much about you.
She leaned across the armrest separating us and gave me a squeeze. She smelled like orange juice.
I've been begging the office to give me your number so I could call you and introduce myself before it all kicked off, but I lost the chance.
Please switch off all laptops and store them securely in the overhead lockers for takeoff and landing.
Catherine said you absolutely nailed your audition. Said you were a right funny lass. I should have known.
Would you mind putting your tray up? Thank you.
I had a feeling you might be on this flight, but it would have been a bit weird if I'd gone up and down the cabin trying to find you. Can you imagine? Me going to every woman on the plane, excuse me, are you about to be my sister?
Please feel free to now walk about the cabin.
So, how are you feeling about it all? I've tried to do some research, but when the script is such a combination of real events and fiction, it's tricky, you know? And I don't know what the production team are on. I've had 9 edits since last Monday, not including the 2 emails I got last night that I daren't look at.
Can I interest either of you in some tea or coffee?
Not for me, thank you. Are you staying at the Grand Hotel or round the corner? I like to be where they put everyone else. Hate being on my own. Did this one job and I was in a different place entirely to the rest of the cast. They'd all been put up in a hotel. Able to have dinner together, drinks, laughs, and I'm being driven 20 minutes in the other direction, to the middle of nowhere, because they thought I would want somewhere nicer. What's nice about eating by yourself?
We will shortly be landing. Please return to your seats.
Holy crap, Jasmine O'Connell doesn't shut up. Like it bothers me. She was speaking to me. Me! And not because a script had told her she had to.
Almost can't believe I'm writing this, but I'm going to dinner with Jasmine O'Bloody Connell. At least, I'm supposed to be. I don't quite know how it's going to happen now I'm sitting in my hotel room with no way to contact her. Don't have her phone number. Don't have her room number. Bloody hell. It's not going to happen, is it? Jasmine will probably get room service. I'll wander across the road for a meal deal and sit in my room watching trash TV thinking about what might have been. I should have asked for her room number, not just got off the lift at my floor. But I was nervous and she wouldn't stop talking. Seriously, I know more about Jasmine than I probably do about Ian at this point. She's an only child. Her dad is an executive producer, not that it's affected the trajectory of her career. Yeah, right. She loves food markets and spoken word nights. She's trying to take up crochet, but just can't find the time. She's a Leo, thinks diet culture should be illegal. Is allergic to nuts and shellfish and what else? Oh yeah, she hates a new fringe. I know Jasmine's somewhere up in the high heavens of the hotel. She's probably in a suite or something. Does this hotel even have suites? Never seen a suite, let alone been in one. There's probably pictures of a suite in the information book. Let's have a nosy. Someone knocking on the door. Where's the do not disturb sign gone? I found Jasmine in the hallway looking a little lost.
I thought I'd misremembered your room number from when we checked in.
She laughed nervously.
Still on for dinner, or?
Yeah, course, I blurted out a bit too eager. Just need to change. Into what? I screamed internally to myself.
Oh, fab. Okay.
She squeezed past me and into my room. It was basically a bed in a cupboard with an ensuite the size of a shoebox attached. Jasmine placed her designer handbag on the mattress runner, then perched herself elegantly beside it. I'm not really the striptease type, but all right. Come on in, I'll whack some music on and do my best. Jasmine's face flooded with horror.
I'm sorry, she yelped. I should have just waited in the hall.
I raised my hands to stop her from leaving. I'm kidding. Chill, sit back down. I'll change in the bathroom. I grabbed my nicer clothes from my suitcase. Still a top and leggings, but at least these didn't have holes in the crotch.
I'm so sorry, Jasmine said again through the bathroom door. I'm not very good at this.
Not good at what?
This. Starting a new job. Meeting new people.
I stepped out, one shoe not yet on. Could have fooled me, sis.